Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Forever Dog.
I have told the truth. This month on the Outside Genre episode, Elizabeth Wines, codename Verity.
Hello, welcome to our March Outside Genre episode. I'm Lindsay Katai.
I am Kelly Nugent.
And today we are talking about Codename Verity by Elizabeth Wines, suggested to us by listener Randy Klett. Thank you so much, Randy, for the book suggestion.
Thank you so much.
And your support.
What did you think of this book, Lindsay?
I liked it.
Me too. Isn't it one of those books where, okay, because you and I were talking about it halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling this way. I don't know if you were. When I was reading it like halfway through, I was like, okay, like where is this going? And then by the end of the book, I was like, wow.
Yeah, okay. I was very impressed because I was, yeah. So this book gets broken up and obviously as usual, this is going to be chock full of spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled on Codename Verity, please go read the book before you listen to this episode. Mm-hmm. It is split up into two parts, which I did not know because on Kindle, it's not the most obvious thing in the world.
No.
And the first part is called Verity. And the second part is called Kitty Hawk. The book is about two women in England during World War II who, you know, work for the military and feel like in the do you want to read the back of the book?
Yeah.
That's probably, we should probably happen first before I start getting into the weeds.
Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
October 11th, 1943, a British spy plane crashes in Nazi-occupied France. Its pilot and passenger are best friends. One of the girls has a chance at survival. The other has lost the game before it's barely begun. When Verity is arrested by the Gestapo, she's sure she doesn't stand a chance. As a secret agent captured in enemy territory, she's living a spy's worst nightmare. Her Nazi interrogators give her a simple choice: reveal her mission or face a grisly execution. As she intricately weaves her confession, Verity uncovers her past, how she became friends with the pilot Maddie, and why she left Maddie in the wrecked fuselage of their plane. On each new scrap of paper, Verity battles for her life, confronting her views on courage and failure and her desperate hope to make it home. But will trading her secrets be enough to save her from the enemy? Harrowing and beautifully... Okay, this part we don't care. That part's a review.
We know what it was.
I also love that this is a misleading, but in a good way, description.
Yes.
One of the girls has a chance at survival. The other has lost the game before it's barely begun. You think you know who they're talking about.
Yeah.
No.
It's very sneaky.
And very sad.
It is very sad. I did cry at the end of the book when it got to the mom's letter.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, oh, I thought this was going to have a happy ending.
Me too! I was like, well, maybe they're going to save her.
I was sure it would have a happy ending because, like, so technically this is classified as YA, but
it's
in
not.
One of those ways where I'm like, this is only classified as YA because a woman wrote it. Because if fucking, I get, as usual, I always use this as a reference, but if Ready Player One is not yep. YA, then this is not YA.
This is not YA. It's just, it's about two women and it's written by
and
a woman.
They're like younger.
This is historical fiction.
And it is like, the writing is very accessible to younger readers, but...
But the content...
The content is not YA. So
and
I don't...
Like,
I'm just very annoyed by that.
And what it expects of you too, as a reader. Like what mm-hmm. it expects of you as a reader because something happens about... a little past halfway through the book when we get to part two that requires, I think, more than a YA book would normally require from a reader, mm-hmm. which is to kind of be like, okay, I need to like parse through. And not even at that point. I think like later when we discover that.
Not until she gets all of what.
Yes, when
Verity
she gets the papers.
Has been writing.
Yes. And then I was like, holy shit, this is pretty impressive.
Uh-huh.
That she did this. That this author wove this, like, did this so well, I guess. Because then you start remembering other little moments and you're like, fuck, that's what she meant by that.
Yeah, so it's a combination of being impressed by the writer and by the character Verity.
Yes!
So I had texted you. I was like, I'm kind of annoyed by the writing style.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like, because I don't like it when somebody is writing an account of mm-hmm. things that have taken place mm-hmm. and they're writing it as though it's a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And like writing it, like writing dialogue out, writing motivations out, mm-hmm. writing super descriptive things. And I was just like, because it's not believable. Nobody writes like that if they're just writing a fucking diary.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also finding it, I was like, why are they letting her write this?
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm still a little bit like, why are they letting her write this? But fine, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Verity has crashed. She has been captured.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even know the name Verity yet, except that part one is called Verity. She is writing out an account of her mission, her intended mission before she was captured. She is writing, and she's like really upset with herself that she's even complying. She calls herself a coward all the time.
And she's like, can you believe I'm sharing all these secrets for like clothes?
Yeah, it's that's like so pathetic how much they're getting out of me for so little. But I'm just like, she's been tortured. And they've had her sitting in her like own urine and excrement, and she's been vomiting, and they're just like not cleaning her up, and just she's in her underwear the whole time, and they're branding
her. They're starving her.
They're starving her, holding her head underwater for long periods of time, and she just like finally snaps and agrees. They come to her with these. She is a wireless operator, so she knows code. Mm-hmm. And they come to her with images of radios they found in the wreck. And they're like, you need to tell us about all of these radios in exchange for your comfort. And so she does. And she's really ashamed of herself. She gives them 11 lines of code and tells them about the radios they found. And she starts writing this account for some reason from the pilot's point of view, her best friend, Maddie.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes about how Maddie got involved in the war. And she's like in the process of telling the story. She is giving them like airfields and airplanes that are being used, even though she's not an expert in that. They just want as much from her as she will give.
And I mean, so there's like, there's a secret reason why she's like writing all this stuff. And then there's like the reason of basically she knows that once she's done and gives them everything, she's dead. Like they're going to kill her. So she's like
she's embellishing as much as possible.
And there's even a moment where she's like, yeah, they're telling me to stop writing so much, but like, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep doing this.
And the captain at the prison she's being held, which is a French hotel that they've taken over, is very lenient in this way. Like, he's enjoying reading it. He's like kind of an intellectual. He's like a bit of a softy, but also not.
Yeah, he's like a Nazi.
He's like,
a
fucking Nazi.
Yeah, but he's like, oh, I want to talk to you about these like German literature heroes.
He's basically starved for interaction.
Yeah.
And he's not lenient in causing pain, but he's lenient in wanting to keep her alive. Mm-hmm. And it's like he has a daughter named Isolde, and that's like part of it. And So he's just, he's letting her write and write and write, even though he shouldn't. And there's a secretary who's being held against her will, who's complying. And there's a young guard who watches over her doing this. And when she does anything they don't like, they like torture her or beat her. Like she gets in a fight with the captain at one point and swears at him. And so he orders the secretary to burn her mouth out with like diluted acid.
Yeah.
The secretary is a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't end up happening, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. There's also like a funny moment. Like, so she's actually, she's pretty funny. Like there's a moment where she talks about how, so she knows German because she studied it. What?
And French.
And French.
Just saying.
Yeah. And she, so one day she comes in and she sees the secretary just like sitting there, like working really hard. And then she says, I forget what she says in German, but something like a stand at attention, like the Führer is here or something like that. And the woman, like the secretary freaks out and like jumps to standing and like snaps to attention and turns around and sees that it's just her saying that. And she gets beaten up for it. But it was, I was like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. I was a little bit annoyed by Verity's writing style when it was super flippant, when she was just like too enamored of herself and thought she was like so cute and clever. Like I got annoyed. I know it's a thing, a real attitude, but I was still like kind of annoyed by it. But like every time they said that she was English, she would get like really offended because she's actually Scottish, and like how dare anybody mistake her for the English because of, you know, England's iron rule over Scotland and Ireland for centuries. And so like sometimes it would get too cute for my taste. And then she started in writing about
Maddie. I guess I didn't really care at first, I was slight like there were where it began to come towards too cute for me, but I was like, you know what, this is all this lady has, so so just let her be cutesy. She's writing her own fucking will right now. Like, well, I'll just let, you know,
certainly by the time it got to the second half of the book, I was like, all right, I take it back.
I mean, once we, because then she starts to get more vulnerable though too.
She's,
and especially, I mean, oh, the Maddie thing. I
when
she cries and cries and cries looking at the pictures that they show,
they,
her,
they force her to look at photos of the crashed airplane and the
charred corpse
of the pilot, and she was hoping that Maddie had made it somehow. And she's writing about their friendship, like she decides to extend her life as long as possible by giving them the secrets but inside the story of their friendship. And so she details their meeting, but it's again from Maddie's point of view, and she meets this girl named Queenie, who's like, like always like totally calm, cool, and collected, and put together, and just like gorgeous and smart. And
it was so funny because you know how she's writing it from Maddie's perspective, and then when she meets her, she's like the most beautiful woman she's ever seen, blah, blah. I was like, oh, damn, is Maddie gay? But then when we find out that that's her, I was like, damn, this woman's just obsessed with herself.
Funny. I guessed that she was Queenie right away.
I loved when she, and this part was like the first crack in her exterior. So she's like describing herself as being so cool and calm. And then that last sentence of that one chapter where she says, I just really hated myself. Like, I hate who I was then.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
And the captain figures this out. Like, they're super annoyed, but, like, the secretary angle is really annoyed by Verity, now Queenie.
Right. And actually, we don't know that her name is Verity. We don't.
Yeah, we don't know the whole time.
The whole time, we just know that her name
is... the book says it, but I didn't really read the back of the book. And I knew it... I mean, the book is called Codename Verity, so, like, we know, but we don't know.
So, well, so I was... Because I didn't really think about it, and I didn't read the back of the book, I totally breezed by the significance of that interview. That
Really?
Yes.
See, that's when I super knew that the interviewer was in on it.
I didn't know because I just wasn't really thinking about the name of the book. And then I
sure
didn't. So I like it hit me later and I was like, oh.
Oh, I see. Okay. Because you're not really supposed to know that the entire time she's right. writing. And so that's for the best.
I think it is because it was a cool reveal.
Yeah. I think, in fact, this book should have been called something else.
Yeah. I think it should not have been called Codename Verity.
Oh, well. It's a great name for a book, but it really does give a lot away. So she's always writing about Angle being annoyed with her and she's complaining to the captain. The captain's like, don't you get it? She's like, she's giving us everything. She's Queenie.
Mm-hmm.
And Angle's like, oh, interesting. Because she has to translate everything into English for the captain or from English into German for the captain. And so, like, in between writing about the story about her and Maddie's friendship, she is also detailing, like, the torture that she's being subjected to by the secretary and the guard and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, and she also says, like, there's, like, certain details about the space itself that she kind of talks about where she's like, oh, when the interviewer came, which we'll get to that more in a second, she's like, she thought that like we were staying, like they gave her a tour of the space to be like, oh, we treat our prisoners really well. But like what she saw was actually the officers' quarters, which are like the first three floors. And they don't put the prisoners anywhere but fourth floor and higher because it's less chance that we'll try to get out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, all the windows are boarded up. I don't get any sunlight, blah, 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 blah. And this is all important for later.
Mm-hmm. And so she's throwing in a bunch of details like this. She's talking about her time in the camp, but without being too detailed. She's like more talking about her experiences than much about the camp. And like the other prisoners who are being tortured won't give up anything. And they hate her because she is collaborating with them and she hates herself. And she cries while she's writing, but she's also like really flippant and has a sense of humor. And she, every time she like talks about herself being so confident in her and Maddie's friendship, she's also like, I could fucking strangle myself. Like, I thought I was such hot shit.
Yeah.
And in the course of the friendship, like they both get separated and they both end up part of the spy missions. Maddie as a pilot transporting people in and out of the country and Queenie as a spy herself, and she eventually, like, she and Maddie are staying together in this cottage after one of her missions, and Maddie sees that Queenie isn't made up like herself. Like, she's got this really, instead of, like, her French updo, she's got this really severe bun, and she has all these bruises on her neck, and Queenie tells her it's because she has been working as an interrogator. She pretends to be German working to get information from captured prisoners as this person, Ava Weiler, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And
it like got she'll violent come in. That
like usually she can get people to talk by like charming them and being nice and lying to them.
Because they want to see someone from their side. Because this is all from captured German soldiers.
Mm-hmm. And she makes them believe that they've been captured by their own people, and she's like trying to debrief them
and like trying to see if they're a spy or something. Mm-hmm.
And this but one in their prisoner desperate that attempt night is,
and in their desperate attempt to like show that they're not spies, they give secrets,
a bunch of information.
Yeah.
And so she was interrogating this one prisoner that night who knew that she wasn't on the level and tried to kill her, and she like talked her way out of it and eventually got a bunch of information from him. And she like felt like hot shit, but she was also super traumatized and spent the night crying in Maddie's arms.
Mm-hmm.
And then the captain gets these pages and he's like marches in on her and he's like, you're Ava Weiler. Fuck you, you're Ava Weiler. And she's like, I am fucking Ava Weiler. And she like charms him into giving his daughter's name without him even thinking about it.
Yeah, like she just does it on the flip of a coin, you know, like turn, like, what is it? She turns on a dime and is just like, do you have a daughter? Like, or she's like, what's your daughter's name? And he says like, Isolde. And he's like, oh God.
How did you like, just get that out of me? And it was because like she she's like a chameleon. She can flip into a different personality or persona. And she made herself look like vulnerable.
Yeah.
And like batted her eyes at him. And she was like, "Don't you have a daughter? What's her name?" And he's like, "Isolde." Son of a bitch.
And then she, and I also love that at this point, she is so fucking like frazzled out that when he does that, she just starts cackling. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, "See?"
like, I don't need to prove it. Like, that is my proof that I'm Ava Wilder or Wyler.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's really excited because he has a much bigger get than just some wireless operator. He got one of their spy interrogators. And this happens before the Ava Wyler thing, but it doesn't really matter. But what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say like the beginning of when she discovers, of like when everybody discovers what her potential is and why she becomes a spy is the crashing German guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was like...
it was key.
Yeah, it was key. So like they're at the camp and...
it's when this is she before, and Maddie... It's yeah. Her and Maddie's first meeting.
Yeah. And it's through Maddie's perspective and Maddie is like just chilling. And then they get like a radio and it's a German voice and he's like freaking out and they're like, fuck, does anybody know German?
Yeah.
And
they bring Queenie in.
Yeah, they bring Queenie and she does. And so Maddie just basically feeds her what to say because they find out that he thinks he's landing in France, but he's turned around, doesn't know where he is. And he's actually landing in England. And so
they do that by Maddie sits with her and gives her like radio like terminology. She coaches her in what to say. And then Queenie says it all in German. And it gives like such an amazing performance as though she knows what she's talking about. That then they use her to interrogate the guy after.
Yeah.
Which Maddie doesn't find out until she finds out about the Ava Wyler thing.
And just, this is minor, but it was one of the moments that I thought was like a cute friendship moment of them two. And this is before anything the umbrella crazy happens. Yes, the umbrella. Yes. I loved the umbrella moment so much. Like also the things that she, what does she say? She says, "I quite feel like a tortoise." I thought that was really cute. the umbrella thing, and then
they call them brawlies.
Yeah, brawlies. That's a British that. And then the when they go on that bike trip to try, they try to go to this bar for lunch before Verity has to be back working somewhere. And she, from seeing this like farmhouse, can tell that they would feed them if they stopped in. And so she wants to get like a lunch there for free. So she...
because they've like, already missed like lunch hours at this pub.
Yeah. So she like takes Maddie into this house and they like pretend to be just like, you know, "Oh, we just work at the base," and kind of like charms her way into this family to like get a free lunch, which I thought was cute. But the umbrella thing, let's talk about the umbrella thing because it's cute.
Yeah, so there's an air raid and they have to escape to a bunker and Maddie, and it took me a while to figure out what was going on because it was raining, but she brought the umbrella in and then she wouldn't close the umbrella and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on, but it was Maddie was like holding onto the umbrella as though the umbrella was going to protect her from the bombs.
And it was protecting her from just like little pieces of crap that were falling from the ceiling, but yeah, it's like not really doing much.
And Queenie sees her doing this and comes over and is like, "This is a great idea. Can I share this with you?" And it's sort of implied, and feel free to disagree with me, but Queenie didn't really care about sharing the umbrella with her. She was trying to talk Maddie out of a state of shock.
Yeah, because Maddie was like gripping white knuckled on this umbrella. And so she was just kind of like talking about the umbrella and saying, oh, I feel like a tortoise, just to kind of get to her to be more mindful, mm-hmm. you know, where she's like, oh, look, we're sitting under an umbrella. Oh, what are five things I see?
Yeah. Tell me all of your fears. Name all your fears. I'll tell you. Like bringing her out of herself, because Queenie is just like really good at people.
And she's amazing, very cool under pressure.
Yes. And can take on these personas. People, and so she like takes on this persona of somebody who's as scared as Maddie.
Yeah.
And so then they become really good friends after that. And the pub thing happens. And they both work for this secret spy mission and get sent on this mission together. Maddie isn't supposed to be flying Queenie to France, but the real pilot, Peter, gets in an accident.
Oh my God. I was also shipping, and I think we were supposed to, obviously, but Maddie and
her brother.
Verity's brother. Yeah. Not
Maddie's brother, but yeah, Verity's brother, Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I very liked much.
Him.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. I thought he was great.
I highlighted this one part because also, like, kind of shipping Maddie and Verity, obviously.
Obviously.
Where is it? But it's that female friendship thing. Like, how intensely you can feel about somebody. And it's after their first night in that air raid. And it says, it's like being in love, discovering your best friend. Like, they're just, they both have, like, friend crushes on each other and are just totally enamored. And I love that.
Their love was so touching to me. Oh, and then there's also a moment, too, where she talks about how she and Maddie, she was talking about how much it sucks being locked up. And she's like, you know, I had this aunt who, because they were talking about mercy killing.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were talking about how they felt bad for the crashed pilot and all this stuff, and she's like, you know, I had this aunt who her husband got really really sick, and they just couldn't remove all of his tumors, and so he asked my aunt to kill him, and she did, and it was because of love, and you know, our family knows the truth, but everyone else just thinks it was a hunting accident, and that they had always liked Laurel and Hardy. And is it Kiss Me, Kate? Is that what it?
Kiss Me, Hardy.
Oh, Kiss Me, Hardy. So that, and they like said that to each other when talking about this story of this uncle and aunt, where, and that they were like, oh, well, I'd do that for you. And then one of them says, Kiss Me, Hardy. And that's just like one of the stories she tells of the many. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, like, it was horrible. It was a horrible thing for the great aunt to live with, but like everybody knew she had done the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And because he was in for a terrible fate.
Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it, part of their bonding.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And then at some point while Verity is in there, they bring in an American woman to interview her. This American woman does Nazi propaganda to be transmitted to American soldiers.
And the idea of this propaganda is very funny to me. It's like, oh man, you soldiers, like if you go down in battle, your wife is gonna snuggle up to the guy who stayed home. So you might as well turn around.
Not be doing this. Or like, isn't it terrible how the British are making female spies? I mean, women doing spy work. What could be less charitable? Blah, 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 blah. And it's like super like cheesy and hokey and sentimental garbage to like try to twist the minds of American soldiers And Queenie is really horrified by this.
Yes. And the prison is all up in a buzz about this interview happening because it's a big deal. They're like, mm-hmm. oh, man, OK, we're going to be featured in this propaganda thing. So we need to make everything look really good. Here's some soap for her. Have her take like a bath.
Because she's been cooperating with them, she's like the least damaged prisoner.
Yes, at least not on her face.
Yes. They have well, that gets talked about later. But so they put her in this, in these nicer clothes, and they give her her silk scarf back, and she ties it around her neck to hide evidence of their torture. And the woman comes to visit, and Queenie is very much playing along. And then the woman, maybe I'll just read this part. What do you think?
Sure. Because I just remember she says, okay, well, I'm going to need the truth. I need absolute verity.
Mm-hmm.
And Verity, who we don't know as Verity at the time, says, Queenie says, like, she's like, laughs. And she's like, okay, Verity, sure. Yeah, I'll tell you the truth. Right. And then quotes something. And I don't remember what it is she quotes. I think it's like lines from.
What happens? She quotes first.
Yes.
And Queenie is having to write this for the captain as like her account of what happened. And so the woman's name is Georgia Penn. And she offers Queenie a cigarette. And
oh, yeah. Hitler hates cigarettes.
Yeah. And so nobody's allowed to smoke. And she takes one. And Georgia Penn says, I don't want to waste my time listening to propaganda. It's my job and I'm wise to it. I'll be frank with you. I'm looking for truth. Je cherche la vérité. And Queenie says, your accent is frightful. I answered also in French. Would you repeat that in English? She did, taking no insult, very serious through a pall of smoke. I'm looking for Verity. It's a bloody good thing von Linden let me have that cigarette, because otherwise I don't know how I'd have managed to conceal that every one of us was dealing out her own damned pack of lies. Truth, I said but it instead, last in
she's
English.
Just like, holy truth, shit, she holy agreed.
Engel came running to my aid with a saucer, there being no ashtrays. I'd sucked the whole cigarette down to the butt in 5 or 6 long drags, composing myself to answer. Verity, I said in English and exhaled every last molecule of nicotine and oxygen I had inside me, then gasped, truth is the daughter of time, not authority, and this above all, to thine own self be true, I gibbered a bit, I confess, Verity, I am the soul of Verity. I laughed so wildly then that the Führer had to clear his throat to remind me to control myself. I am the soul of Verity, I repeated, je suis l'esprit, la vérité, de vérité, excuse me, and obviously that was abysmal to all French people. I apologize. And amongst the tobacco fugue, Georgia Penn very kindly handed me what was left of her own cigarette. And then they continue the interview and she keeps giving this account of what happened. And of course, because I was thinking about the fact that I knew her code name was Verity, I was like, oh, Dan, the reporter is checking on her. And she freaks out when she hears Verity because she's like, oh, this bitch is in on it.
Yeah.
She's not doing propaganda, or she is, but it's like all, she's a spy too. She's here to check on me. And so this whole interview where I was like, what is this bitch babbling on about? She keeps saying weird things that I was confused by. Like,
mm-hmm.
like it says, no, she says that the nickname for the prison is Le Chateau
Butcher.
Yeah, and it means it's like the real name of the hotel is like Chateau de Bordeaux, mm-hmm. Bordeaux Castle, but they call it Chateau de Barreau, which means Castle of Butchers.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, no, I'd not heard that, I said. And I honestly haven't, perhaps because I am so isolated most of the time. Shows you how distracted I am that I didn't think of it myself. Well, as you can see, I am still in one piece. She really looked at me hard for a second, just 1 second. I smoothed my skirt down over my knee. Then she became businesslike and produced a notebook and pen while a pale, Gestapo, right? I started to get really in my head about that, but of course,
Gestapo.
Underling, who looked about 12 years old, poured cognac for the three of us. The three of us, VL, GP, and me, not Engel, out of a crystal decanter into snifters as big as my head. At this point, I became so deeply suspicious of everyone in the room that I could not remember what I was supposed to say. Alibi is all I could think of. This is different. I don't know what's going on. He wants to catch me off guard. It's a new trick. Is the room bugged? Why have they lit the fire and not the chandelier? And what does the talking cockatoo have to do with it? Wait. What else is there to get out of me? I'm giving the Gestapo everything I know. I've been doing it for weeks. Pull yourself together, Lassie. You're a Wallace and a Stewart, which is like a very Scottish thing.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I purposefully put out my cigarette against my own palm. Nobody noticed.
I love that she, so at first you're like, okay, she's losing it. But it's that she is using these journals to rewrite what is actually happening. So she's like, okay, I need to fucking explain why I started freaking out when she said the Verity thing. So I'm just going to say that I'm fucking crazy now because of all the torture,
mm-hmm.
and that I didn't know what to do or say because I felt like it was all a lie.
When really cool. It's that, yeah, she like flipped when she heard her own code name.
And she was like, holy shit, oh my God, be cool.
this is a point where I was like, it's a moment where I was annoyed with the writing, but then I found out later was very specific and intentional. And I was like, well, the author's got one on me.
that entire exchange is so specific.
What the fuck are you talking about? And then I was like, why is this part underlined? Here it is. So she says, can you speak on behalf of other prisoners here? We don't see much of each other. I had to dodge that one. Or not to speak to. I do see them too often. Will you get a tour? She nodded. It looks very nice. Clean linen in all the rooms. A bit Spartan. Well, he did too, I said waspishly. It used to be a hotel. No proper dungeon rooms. No damp. No one suffering arthritis at all. And I was like, what the fuck are you babbling about? And it turns out that was all like code because mm-hmm. they call a certain like radio arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, when these papers all get smuggled out to the French resistance, who Maddie is bunkering with, because we find out Maddie's not dead. And mm-hmm. and she reads this and she immediately knows that this is code for like, they can't transmit out of here. And the place has its own generator.
Yeah.
That's what she means by everyone's quite warm and no one has arthritis. And I was like, yeah. Well, fuck me.
Yeah.
This author is very smart.
Because she has to do two things, right? She has to make it be that this person is writing something that's going to explain in an innocent way her behavior that might be kind of not so innocent to the Gestapo, but then also communicate something to anyone who might find those papers.
Mm-hmm. And she also has to, she's very purposely babbling in the writing, which is what I was finding too cutesy, all the babbling. But the babbling has a very specific purpose, because if she's not constantly babbling about some things, then the stuff where that does right. seem like babbling will stand out.
So
she has yeah. to constantly be babbling and constantly be glib and sounding like an idiot and making all these jokes so that the few things that are meant for resistance leaders won't be obvious.
Yeah. And she has to like overshare about certain things, so that way when certain stories about her past are included, they don't
seem suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's extremely impressive.
Extremely impressive. Like by the end of the book, I was like, I could not write this. I
was really impressed.
I was very impressed. Like, if I did do it, it would take me many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, like, it really, it's one of those books where by the time you get to part two, it really changes what you think about part one, which mm-hmm. is really cool.
Yeah, completely. To the point where I was like, oh, I'm dumb and wrong. I was dumb to be annoyed by the writing.
I remember when we were texting and I was like, it's worth it. something's going to happen that's going to make it worth it. Trust me.
And I did believe you, but I like didn't, I couldn't conceive of what it was.
No.
Which is very like dumb of me. Now it seems dumb.
No, but I liked, I was shocked too. I was very shocked because I didn't get fully on board with everything until I started to really like, I mean, this is maybe fucked up with me. But like I started to really like Queenie once she got really depressed.
Yes. Well, it was because I don't like anybody who is unflappable, truly unflappable, like because it makes you a Mary Sue. If you are never vulnerable and never doubt yourself, then you're not real.
Yeah. I mean, the moment that she really started breaking down when she thought that Maddie was dead, I was like, ah, fuck. Like that, I was like, okay, I do feel like she's a full person now. And then by the end, when she's just like, I'm just gonna fucking die. Like, I am going to be killed by these people. And being killed is the best I can hope for. Mm-hmm. Because they are gonna send me somewhere, possibly, where I'm gonna be fucking experimented on.
I know, and I was like, what the fuck are the experiments?
Well, it's all those Nazi experiments.
Well, I know that there were a bunch of Nazi experiments, but I was like, but which ones are they going to do on her?
I
know.
I was like, but which ones?
Yes. And yeah. I wanted to read this part because I thought it was a really nice bit. It was like a very specific and I liked it. So Georgia Penn is leaving.
The American interviewer.
Yes. And she said, she turns to Queenie and, the book says, then she leaned close to me and said in confidential tones, can I get you anything, send you anything, little things, towels? I told her I'd stopped. Well, I have, and they wouldn't let her anyway, would they? I don't know. According to the Geneva Convention, you're allowed to send useful things to prisoners of war, cigarettes, toothbrushes, fruitcakes with hacksaws inside. But as I've just pointed out, the Geneva Convention doesn't apply to me. Knocked and Nebel, night and fog, Burr, as far as Georgia Penn knows, I have no name. To whom would she address the package? And again, just reading that now, at the time I was like, what the fuck are you babbling about? And now I realize that she's trying to tell the resistance that she hasn't told them her name. The Geneva Convention doesn't apply to her.
Yeah.
And she is a part of what the Nazis call night and fog, NN, and those are prisoners specifically designated to go to it's like the worst camps to be experimented on. So this is, she knows that she's going to get these papers out and this is her trying to tell them that. So she's not just babbling.
Yeah. And she's also saying like, I am on enemy territory. I am trapped here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they are going to take me to one of these camps. She asked, you're not, it was a rather extraordinary conversation, if you think about it. Both of us speaking in code, but not military code, not intelligence or resistance code, just feminine code. You haven't been. I'm sure Engel was able to fill in the blanks. Can I send you sanitary towels? No, thanks. I've stopped bleeding. You're not pregnant. You haven't been raped. Raped. What was she going to do about it if I had? Anyway, technically speaking, I've not been raped. No, I've just stopped. I've not had a cycle since I left England. I think my body simply shut itself down during those first few weeks. It performs basic functions only now. It knows perfectly well it's never going to be called on for reproductive purposes. I'm a wireless set.
Oh, right.
And this is all, again, so this is about her treatment. This is about how they're going to do experiments on her. It, like,
about where they're going to send her, where she is now. Yeah.
All a story and code at the same time.
And at the same time, yeah, exactly. Like throwing it off for the Gestapo being like, oh, we're not speaking in that kind of code. It's a ladies thing, you know, periods, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's really good.
It's really impressive.
It's very impressive. And then after that, you know, she gets tortured some more. So she keeps overhearing this French girl next to her being tortured.
Mm-hmm.
And she's tired of hearing it. And so finally she's like, just lie. And she screams just it at this
lie
girl.
To them. Yeah.
And then the sound stops abruptly. And they bring her in to where the French girl is sitting. And it's obvious that they've like kind of talked to her, and they're like, so then they're like, bring her in. They're like, do you have something to say to this French girl? Like, say it to her face. And she's like, fine. Yeah, just like, lie.
She doesn't think much of your suggestion.
Yeah. And then the French lady turns to her, French girl turns to her and goes, is that what you did? And then she's like, holy shit, was this to get to me? And yeah, that moment I was like, fuck.
Yeah. And she starts freaking out. And she's like, no, 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 I've never lied. I've never lied. I've never lied. And she's writing this in the manuscript, trying to convince them, like, I told the truth. I told the truth. I told the truth. And they, because of this, they force her to watch them execute the French girl.
Yeah.
And again, everybody thinks that Verity is complying with them.
Yeah.
And giving them information, but she's only pretending to. So that's the thing, is she is lying to them. And I think she truly did just like freak out and want to help this French girl, and was like, just fucking lie like I'm doing. I'm fucking lying. It's so easy if you would just try to do it.
Yeah. And then the moment where the French girl says to her, like, is that what you're doing? I think she realizes kind of her slip, and it's like, no, no, I'm not. And the way that they make, because she doesn't know if she's going to be executed. She just is going out into the yard where they have a guillotine set up.
She thinks they're
going
to watch her. She thinks they're forcing her to watch the French girl die and then are going to kill her.
Yeah. In that moment, I think too, because that's the thing, everybody in the prison hates her because they all think that she's
collaborating.
Like all the other fellow prisoners. Yeah. The fellow prisoners think she's a weakling that just turncoat, you know? And so she, when she's walking, there's like a moment where she describes it, the back of her hand, she can feel the back of the French girl's hand because they tied their wrists together. And that's fucked. Her wrist was tied to her while that girl's head was cut off. That's fucked.
Mm-hmm. Because she gets her blood all over her face.
Yeah. And she's like, I never knew your name. And the girl just doesn't say anything. And then right as her head's about to be chopped off, she like says to Queenie, my name is it Marie?
Yeah.
She's like, my name is Marie. And then the thing comes down and it fucking sprays her in the face. And then they bring her back inside and they don't kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And then like one of the last things that we see from her, or I guess the last thing, is she's like, well, I've said it all. I've told them everything I know.
I can't.
And they're
going
to send me there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing in the pile is a suggestion from the Gestapo above the captain that's there that suggests that she gets sent to one of the experimental camps.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like,
stop being lenient.
Yeah. And that, do it now.
Yeah.
And
so
that's the last you
see
of her. Yes, please do.
Note to Amadeus von Linden from Nicholas Ferber, translated from the German. This is my final reminder to you that Flight Officer Beaufort Stewart is a designated NN prisoner. She has been seen twice in your custody, and I will be forced to take formal action against you if it happens again. I recommend you send her at once to Notzweiler Struthof as a specimen, with the order that she be executed by lethal injection after 6 weeks if she survives the experimentation. If you show this devious little liar one atom's worth of compassion, I will have you shot, Heil Hitler. And then it's part two, Kitty Hawk. And then all of a sudden we're in Maddie's diaries, which make a lot more sense and aren't written with like long, they aren't written like a novel. They're written like diaries.
Well, and they're written in her voice. She's just a lot more no nonsense. She's not really a writer. She's like,
they she's have like, different look, I like personalities.
you want to hear something crazy?
What?
So Micah has been trying to, or he's been sending in his documentation for proof that his family was had to flee Austria during the Holocaust. And so he's been having to send it over to the Austrian consulate. And he's been going through and finding like not only immigration papers, but like the Aryanization papers of like,
oh, wow,
taking over, like taking their businesses and giving them to non-Jewish people. And mm-hmm. all of the documents are signed Heil Hitler.
Ugh. God, isn't that so disturbing?
Disturbing and creepy.
Yes.
And then in a more lighthearted way, Micah wasn't really understanding some of the stuff that he needed to do from the website. So he called the Austrian consulate with some questions. And it was the most Austrian person that was just like so disinterested. And he was like, I just don't really understand what I'm supposed to be doing. And they're like, but don't you understand? And he's like, oh, I don't know like which forms. And then they like interrupted him and they're like, it's all very simple. It's all in the document. So I just don't know what you don't understand. And he was like, okay. Okay. Well, thank you. I guess
I'll just reread.
But yeah, so he's doing that to try and get dual citizenship because you can do that if you have that proof. Yeah, for EU and U.S. citizenship. And most places, you have to relinquish one to get EU citizenship. Mm-hmm. But for Austria, you don't have to do that. You can keep both.
Oh, interesting. So
he was looking into that because that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And it extends to me.
Also, just in case.
That's why he was rushing to do it.
I figured.
Before, yeah. And I mean, even still now, just good to have, just in case.
Yeah. Just in case, I don't know, 4 years from now doesn't go great. Or yeah. 2 years from now.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Or tomorrow.
Or tomorrow.
But yeah, so we're with Maddie.
So it being signed Heil Hitler.
Isn't that awful?
It's really awful. That must be so disturbing for him to have to look at.
Yeah, he was like very disturbed by it.
Yeah. And that made me realize something, actually, you bringing that up, is that we don't find out Maddie is Jewish until it's Maddie's point of view. She was hiding the fact that Maddie is Jewish. No,
we do with Queenie. Oh, right. She just
says her father sells to Jews.
Yes.
Because he owns a bike shop. But we
find out that he is Jewish. Yes,
because she thinks that Maddie might still be alive and that they could find her, so she's not telling them.
Right. Right.
And I was like, aww.
Yeah. And then also, like, Maddie at this point doesn't know that Queenie is still alive. So, like, there is, at the beginning of both of their stories, they're both like, oh, man, my best friend is dead. that terrible British guy. Paul can go suck a hot dog.
Yes.
He's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's this, like, this guy who's extremely, like, helpful and like, a good soldier, but who, like, gropes all women within, like, 5 feet of him. Mm-hmm. And, like, walks in to try to hopefully just seduce Maddie. And she, like, pulls a gun on him. And he's like, what? I wouldn't have done anything. And she's like, I'm extremely disturbed, not knowing whether that's true. Because I couldn't have, like, cried out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because she realizes, like, where she is. Because she has to hide in a crawl space for, like, you know, for days.
Weeks.
But she also, oh, yeah, weeks. And then she's like, because, you know, anytime, like, he teaches her how to shoot. And she's just like, God, he's touching me more than he needs to. I know that. He doesn't need to be touching me.
Leaving his hand on my shoulder for too long. Putting it on my waist when he doesn't need to. Little things like that.
He's so icky.
He is icky. And it's interesting, though, because it's like he's icky, but he's also like a straight up hero.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really complex character to have. Yeah. I think that's cool.
And I liked that he was complicated.
Yeah.
Now we're in Maddie's point of view. She was able to land the plane. She didn't crash. The crash was staged and they put in the body of a German scout that they had found.
That guy, wrong place, wrong time, dog.
Wrong place, wrong time. But he shouldn't have gone to report it because
funeral. He should have, if he saw that, he should have just head down, keep walking. Instead, he was mm-hmm. like, oh boy, I can't wait for the floor to see what I've done.
It's such a treat for this.
Such juicy chocolate treats for me.
Such a sausage in my future.
I'm so sorry to our German listeners.
Fuck you, Germany.
But so he's all excited, tries to run off, and so they just shoot him down, stick him in the airplane, and light him on fire.
Yeah,
and
then they're like, to make it look like it was, because anyone will have seen that they had to light flares to guide Maddie to land, because mm-hmm. it was like a harrowing. They got shot when they were flying into the country. Maddie was like barely keeping control of the airplane.
Oh my God, that Queenie, part was who so we now stressful. Know to
be Julie, because she wrote her real name in the account when she knew that she was at the end of the book. Die. Yeah. Also, her name is Julie Lindsay.
Ah, Julie Lindsay. Spelled
the same way. She has like five names. It was not the best name.
No, I mean, it's very long because she's like old money. It's Scottish. Very long,
but it also like didn't flow well. Like I was just thinking, I was just judging her long, not flowing well name. Because I was like, come on, parents, you could have done better than this.
Yeah, they could have done better by her.
Yeah. Her name is Lady Julia Lindsay Mackenzie Wallace Beaufort Scott. No, Beaufort Stewart. I don't know where. Oh, it's because she's Scottish. That jumped out in my brain at the same time. Yeah, but everybody calls her Julie. But her nickname has also been Scotty and Queenie. And the way she just ends her papers, just writing, I have told the truth over and over again.
Oh, my God. Ugh. It's so, the story is very heartbreaking. So just be prepared to cry at the end because it's really fucking sad.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those things where it tricks you with a little bit of hope.
Yeah, you don't know if she... Because it just ends with her saying, I have told the truth, and then it cuts off at I have told. And then it has that memo.
Yeah.
But you don't really know what could have happened. Because then it jumps to Maddie's perspective, detailing what happened in the crash, like how much she struggled, how Julie jumped and parachuted down. Kind of wondering if Maddie was going to make it. And then Maddie was able to land the plane. They lit these flares. She landed the plane, but they had to destroy the plane and the site
so that nobody
could trace. Yeah, and fake her death so that nobody could trace it back to her. And we find out that the photo of all of those radios was planted. They were like fake. And so all of the lines of code Julie was giving them was made up.
Mm-hmm.
She was not, she used to be a wireless operator, but she was not a wireless operator anymore. She just made up stuff about the radios, everything. Like, yeah, the airfields were fake.
We find out
once Maddie gets a hold, she gave them absolutely nothing. So all of her, like, I'm such a coward. I'm sure she like, it was like, she did feel afraid and was like afraid to die, but she was giving them nothing.
Yeah.
And I really liked finding out that all of the stuff she was writing about Engel's cruelty was made up.
Yes, because Engel, they were flipping Engel.
Yes, she told them that. So she was working on Engel to make her a double agent, which she succeeded in doing. And so then Engel is the one who gets the papers out. And she tells Maddie how she was found. She looked... That was correct. She looked the wrong way crossing the street because she's British.
That's like the thing in what's that movie where he does the wrong three?
Excuse me. Oh yeah, it's Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's like
holds
that.
Up the index, middle, and third finger, but
it's really
but there they do thumb, index, middle.
Yeah.
And so that was like a dead giveaway that he was American. Right? Is that what it was? Or maybe
I can't
it
remember which three you put up. I can't remember if it's thumb or pointer middle or middle
ring middle.
Pinky and ring. Let me see.
And they do the
how to the do okay three. Sign.
Is that why German? That's a Nazi sign?
Hold on. Oh no, you're right. Three is thumb, pointer, middle.
Yeah, so I guess that's like European, and then Americans do the index middle ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of like that. She was looking the wrong way. She almost got hit by a truck. It turned out that Maddie was in the truck.
I know. They were so close.
That was very sad. So we find out that Maddie was in the truck that almost hit her. And then people always have eyes for that kind of thing. So as soon as she did that, they abducted her.
And it was like so close to that prison anyway. Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah.
She was getting the blueprints for it because her mission was they were going to blow it up, I think, and mm-hmm. try to get the prisoners out. But so Angle was there when they abducted her, was like really upset, saw that while they were like trying to bring her down, she was like fighting like hell, and she was using her scarf to try to wipe something off her hand. She had written like the Dewey Decimal System. She had like written down what the plans were filed under, I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Angle helped her wipe them off and handed the scarf to her. And
yeah.
And
no one checked the ink stain on the, so no one knew what she was doing with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And and that's also in the fucking papers yeah. that she smuggles out to check her scarf for code. Mm-hmm. Because that's where Angle's written something. Mm-hmm. Man, that's good. So so they abduct her, and so the whole time Angle is like kind of helping her, and she's like numbered all the pages and she smuggles them out, and she's telling Maddie how, and this is like much, much later in the book.
Because a lot of Maddie's story is like a training montage where she's like training to like learn how to shoot a gun, and like you know, there's like some shipping stuff with her and Paul, or not Paul, her and Jamie, and she goes to visit Jamie's house and Queenie's old house, and sees that the mom leaves the windows open all the time just in case the kids might come flying home like Peter Pan, and that's really sad. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot of like her like trying to pretend to be French, and her accent is atrocious, and all this stuff.
And also it's now paying off a bunch of things that Queenie had written.
Yes.
In her papers, making it clear that like Queenie was like fucking making shit up.
Yeah.
And so she meets with Angle, and she's at this point read all of Julie's writing. And I just really liked the end moment where Angle offers her a cigarette, and Maddie gets really mad. She's like, "You never offered Julie a cigarette." And she's like, "What are you talking about? That greedy little Scottish weirdo took like half my allowance in cigarettes from me. Do you have any idea how many cigarettes I gave her?" And that was the moment where Maddie's like, "Oh, that was all made up. Yeah. All of her moments of cruelty were made up to protect Angle."
And then it highlighted also other parts that were fake in there where she's mm-hmm. like, "This is weird. Like, I don't remember her telling me about this aunt. Like,
yeah,
that didn't happen. What is she talking about?"
So there's all of this stuff with Maddie hiding out and us finding more and more out. So they find out that Julie has made contact, but then they lose track of her. She just disappears. And they start to figure out that she's been taken prisoner. And she's met with Georgia Penn. And that's when we start finding out about the interview, the truth mm-hmm. about the interview, which is that every moment that Julie was like being glib or flicking her wrist or like posing in some certain way that she's detailed for some silly reason, she was showing Georgia marks on her body where she'd been tortured, and she was giving away little secrets like the arthritis thing and the warmth thing, mm-hmm, to telling mm-hmm. them that they have their own generator. So she was giving them all of these secrets. Georgia comes out with it, lets them all know what she had been given, and Maddie is like, "Oh, my friend is so brave and wonderful." And at this point, I'm like, "She is. She is so brave and wonderful." Yeah, I didn't know. And
I was like, "We all agree. Maddie, she's the best. Your friend is wonderful.
She's doing amazing things." And and they figure out from this they get some other piece of information, I guess.
Because we get the entire package of papers, so we know
does
where
that
she's
happen
going
before.
Yeah, because that's how we know all that stuff. So they get the package of papers and they're like, fuck, we need to like act now. We need to act now because
they're transporting.
Yes, they're going to be transporting her now. And once she's out of here, we can't get her. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we need to do it now.
So that story about the great aunt killing her great uncle, Maddie's like, she never told me that story. What is she talking about? Like, I guess she did, but I don't really remember it, about the aunt having to kill the uncle. Yeah. And so they are able to blow up the bridge. But when they stop the bus, the Germans haul all of the prisoners out and just shoot six of them all at once. And it's
and the
so
way
sad
they shoot them is like their elbow, their knee, their shoulder.
Well, first
it's like
they just
slow.
Straight up shoot six of them in the head to show that they
that's right business.
Julie
and then the guy right
is
before
there.
Her, yeah.
And Julie's face down, and she like taunts one of the soldiers. And Maddie's like, "What is she doing? She's gonna get herself shot." And the girl that she's been staying with is like, "Well, yeah, exactly. She wants to get herself shot." And because like it's a lot better than where she's going.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to get the prisoners out, and Maddie realizes like they're fucked because the Nazis are so much crueler than they could have seen
coming.
And
they
like
they call
they
in,
just start shooting off the knees and elbows of everybody.
Well, and more Nazis show up.
Mhm.
So they have more Nazis show up, and so that moment, I even at that moment I was like, well, maybe she'll get
yeah,
her
I
out.
Thought I still thought she was gonna get out.
When it's like
so
they're surrounded by fucking Nazis. Like stupid. She's not gonna get out. But I was like, well, maybe
I thought maybe. But why not? She could have written it that way.
She did so good earlier, and so maybe she could get
so
out.
So we can do it. And so also, Julie thinks that Maddie is dead, and it's Maddie.
Oh yes, Maddie
cries a lot. I love how much Maddie cries because she is brave. She still goes through with everything. She like knows a lot about mechanics. She's a pilot, but she cries all the time. And I was like,
she's a little crybaby
all the time.
Yeah,
and so they're all of these prisoners are getting shot, and Maddie's hiding. It says, when they shot him in one elbow and then again very rapidly in the same place to shatter it, my not very reliable control just went and I burst into tears. I couldn't help it. Something snapped. Like when we went to help the gunner, it made sound and found the dead boys. I burst into loud gulping sobs, bawling like a baby. Her face, Julie's face, suddenly lit up like a sunrise, joy and relief and hope all there at once. And she was instantly lovely again, herself, beautiful, because she's like a fucking skeleton at this point.
Yeah,
she heard me, recognized my fear of gunfire blubbing. She didn't dare call out to me, didn't dare give me away, or May's most desperate fugitive. They fired at the second man again, destroying his other arm, and he fainted dead away. They had to drag him to the lorry. Julie was next. Suddenly she laughed wildly and gave a shaking yell, her voice high and desperate. Kiss me, Hardy, kiss me quick. Turned her face away from me to make it easier, and I shot her. I saw her body flinch. The blows knocked her head aside as though she'd been thumped in the face. Then she was gone. Gone. One moment flying in green sunlight, then the sky suddenly gray and dark, out like a candle. Here, then gone. Because,
oh
like,
my God,
Kiss Me Hardy
sunlight.
Was the last
oh
thing she had said to her before she jumped out of the plane.
Oh, yeah. And it was from that story.
And it was from that story. So it was like an inside joke that they had. And she'd written it into her notes that like her last words would have been this. And how it was the right thing for her aunt to kill her uncle.
Yeah.
All telling whoever read it to like just kill her the second they see her. Because she doesn't want to go to this camp. And so Maddie does it. And I was like, huh?
Yeah, I was like, wait, but then I was like, is she gonna
right
get up?
There. I was like, is she okay?
Oh my God.
She's okay, right?
Yeah.
No.
I literally was like, maybe she just got her in the shoulder.
Yeah, I was like, she could be fine. They could,
and then the
now
green,
they can run and get her.
And then the green sunlight thing. Oh, I forgot about that. That was so beautiful. They were flying and it was really late at night and they see this bright green light and they're scared at first because they're like, is that from like a bomb or is that?
Yeah, are they testing something?
And then it turns out it's like this rare phenomenon that happens where the light is lit up by a green flash and they just exist above the war for a second together. And then to have that moment come back, I was really sad.
I thought Julie was going to make it.
Me too.
I just thought that's the kind of book we were in. It wasn't.
Yeah, me too.
And not in a bad way. It was good.
No, it was good. It was narratively a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been a little bit.
I would have been fine if she survived. But I like it. It just, the book got a lot more poignant.
Yes. I mean, it was just so, I don't know, it was so beautiful.
She finds out reading the papers that, and I don't think she does get the papers till afterward. Because I think she reads the thing about the aunt and is like, it's almost like she knew being to kill forgiven her. After. I think she knew to kill her because of the kiss me hearty, but kiss me quick.
And the kiss me hearty thing was also from the aunt and uncle story. And then,
well, she gets in there, but that was already a thing that they had. That right. was already
no. I mean, she just falsely put it in there to be a message like "kill me if you hear that." Because I remember her reading over them. Remember, she hides in the attic and just like reads all of them, and she's like, because that's how they're able to find out like about what parts of the building that they can bomb safely without hurting the prisoners, and information about like. Maybe she doesn't get them until afterwards.
I don't think she gets them till afterward.
Oh, so it's like a forgiveness. And then she gets a really heartbreaking
letter. Maybe she does get it. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I think she gets it before because that helps them find her.
No, she doesn't.
So she just sits and reads them.
I don't think. That all happens after. Somehow she's gotten through Georgia that Angle could be dealt with. And so she leaves the scarf. It's the scarf that gives them the information that they're going to be transported.
Yeah.
And then she shoots her. And then afterward, I'm trying to make sure. Yeah. She gets it after. So she's recovering with who turns out to be the great aunt. And she's like, I'm going to drink this now. I'm going to go to sleep. Angle's passed me all these papers. I haven't had the heart to look, but it must be from Angle again. I jolly well don't feel like reading anything Angle has sent me anymore tonight, but tomorrow is Sunday and there will be croissants with the coffee and I expect it will still be raining. And then the next page, it is not Angle's writing. It is Julie's. I haven't finished reading yet. I've scarcely started. It is hundreds of pages long. Half of it on little bits of card. This is all after she's shot Julie.
Ugh.
So it was this. It was Angle smuggling out the scarf that told them about the prisoners.
Oh.
And then after she's killed, that's when the like cook or maid that works in the prison smuggles the paper out. And the maid is probably then sent to the camp for doing
that. Oh, yes,
that.
The maid. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. So
it's not until she's reading it after the fact that she sees that story.
And then, she's like,
almost like being absolved.
So they communicated that to each other without.
Yeah. Just because of kiss me hearty, kiss me quick. And because of the fact that she had just been trying to get the soldier to shoot her.
Yeah.
And the girl who she'd been staying with saying like, she's like, she's going to get herself shot. And the girl saying like, yeah, that was kind of the point. Yeah. And then her saying, kiss me hearty, kiss me quick.
Quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like seeing what had just happened and what likely was going to happen.
Yeah, and how they weren't going to be able to get anyone out because of she was like about to just get her fucking elbows shot off.
Mm-hmm.
And then still would be transported to camp.
Ugh.
And the thing where it's like, it said, no, don't shoot her. The soldiers were like, don't shoot her yet. We won't be able to have any fun with her. And the girl next to her says like, yeah, that's why she was doing that. because they want to have their Nazi fun with her. And I was thinking like, oh, rape. But it was like, no, experiment and torture.
I mean, maybe also creepy
Nazi
rape.
Shit. Probably also rape.
But in addition but to also fun. Experiments. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how she knows what Julie wants her to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then she finds out after this story that she put in there.
Okay, do the letter from the mom.
Okay, I might cry though. I don't know if I can do it. I get more choked up reading out loud than I do even reading to myself. Yes, please.
Okay, I'll do it.
Also, it was very funny because so Kindle was telling me like this book is going to take like five and a half hours to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, huh, there's an hour left. Well, that's weird. I guess we get a lot of Maddie's story when she's back in England. No, the whole hour after that was an excerpt from what's like kind of a prequel.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm done. Oh, good. I can go to bed.
I read it on what's it called? Open Library. So mine didn't have that.
Oh. Yeah. So it was really only a 4-hour read.
Okay. Sorry. I'm just getting to it.
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Okay. So this is from Lady Beaufort Stewart, Craig Castle, Castle Craig. Oh, that's the other funny thing is that her house is called Craig Castle, Castle Craig. 26 December 1943. My darling Maddie, Jamie has delivered your letters, both yours and Julie's, and I have read them. They will stay here and be safe. The Official Secrets Act is of little consequence in a house which absorbs secrets like damp. A few more recipe cards and prescription forms tossed in amongst the teeming contents of our two libraries will surely go unnoticed. I want to tell you what Jamie said to me as he gave me these pages. Maddie did the right thing. I say so too. Please come to see me, Maddie darling, as soon as they let you. The wee lads are all distraught with the news and you'll do them good. Perhaps they will do you good as well. They are my only consolation at the moment and I have been fearfully busy trying to make it a happy Christmas for them. Ross and Jock have now lost both parents in the bombing, so perhaps I shall keep them when the war is over. I should like to keep you too, if you'll let me. I mean in my heart and as my only daughter's best friend. It would be like losing two daughters if you were to leave us now. Oh my God. Please come back soon. The window is always open. Woo! Fly safely.
Told you.
I don't know what that means. You're loving Esme. P.S. Thank you for the Etterpen. It is most extraordinary. Not a single word of this letter has blotted. No one will ever know how many tears I shed while writing it. I do mean fly safely, and I do mean come back. And that's that.
It's really sad.
It's really sad.
I cried again.
It's really sad. I cried again, obviously, as you heard. Ugh. And windows always open? Stop.
Do not.
Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Cut it out. And as usual, with all of our episodes, I actually appreciate it even more talking about it.
Yes. I mean, this book was like...
I appreciated it when I read it, but having like a day to sit with it and then talking to you about it, I'm like, damn, this book is good.
Yeah. I feel the same where I was like, oh, like after I read it, I was like, whoa. And then I kind of like sat with it. And then now talking to you about it, I'm like, wow. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Elizabeth Wine really did artful, something with this.
Yeah, it's just a really artful book. Like when I finished it, I went, oh, that was really sweet. And I got teary at the end. And in talking about it now, I'm like, I can't believe it. We died. And leave the window open.
I was literally like, Julie just did her best and she just really didn't stop trying and she worked so hard and it was for nothing and she died and her best friend had to kill her.
Ugh. They did. I mean, it's they so did, captured. Though, from what she gave them in the thing is like, then Engel went through everything and underlined everything of importance. Like she and Engel after Julie would finish writing, she would tell Engel like what in there was important to highlight after the fact. And so that's how they knew like this, like specs of the building and where to find the prisoners. And oh, and I knew that this was important when I read it, but I couldn't figure out what the fuck was going on. As she talks about how Engel gave her a like this floating American soap that smelled really nice to clean herself up was before she saw was Georgia in there, Penn. Right? She had put a key in there.
Yes.
Of some kind.
And that's why it was floating, because it was like special.
So she got a key, and I think she snuck out, and this was said in Maddie stuff. She snuck out, she got the keys, she got a key to something else, put the keys back, and like the captain was in a ton of trouble over it. He was also in a ton of trouble for bringing Georgia Penn in. And
yes,
at the end of the book, the captain shoots himself. Von Linden shoots himself. And Maddie is like,
yeah,
really sad for his daughter.
Oh, Isolde, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like sitting with it, I appreciate it even more.
Yeah. Like when we talked about like just all of the details that like everything paid off, you know, like all everything. Ugh. Like everything like, had to serve like, three purposes.
She writes in there that she's like talking about Angle, and she's like, oh, she'd be almost pretty if she did this, that, and the other. Like, I think red would be her color.
Oh my God.
And she and says that thing about red being her color, and Angle, everything that's important, she underlines in red. And so that's the signal to the person reading it. Like, red is her color. Angle, underline also, this for you.
It also was like just cute that like Maddie separately thought to herself, like, she'd look good in red. Like, I thought that was cute that they both had the same conclusions about things separately. And so also, they really Maddie finds out
that they had the same dream about them flying together.
Oh yeah.
And seeing the green moon.
Oh my God.
It's very sweet. It's a very sweet book, and I really recommend it.
So there are multiple books in this series.
Did she end up writing more? I knew that there was sort of a like quasi prequel, and there was supposed to be a sequel, but it like didn't quite pan out.
So there is a prequel. Before Verity, there was Julie. It's called The Pearl Thief. It doesn't have as great reviews on Goodreads. Then she has this other one called The Enigma Game. Oh, that's separate. That's not part of the Codename Verity series. Oh, no, it is. It's book two. So book one is The Pearl Thief. Book two is The Enigma Game, which is a German soldier risks his life to drop off the sought-after Enigma machine to British intelligence. And it's just about something about that. And then Codename Verity is book three. And then book four is rated better than Codename Verity. And it's called Rose Under Fire. While flying an Allied fighter plane from Paris to England, American ATA pilot and amateur poet Rose Justice is captured by the Nazis and sent to Ravensbrück, the notorious women's concentration camp. Trapped in horrific circumstances, Rose finds hope in the impossible through loyalty, bravery, and friendship of her fellow prisoners. But will that be enough to endure? I mean, this is probably going to be very sad as well. I'm going to tell you something.
Probably. She's a good writer. She's also a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Also a pilot. I did read that she originally was like, I just wanted to write about a pilot because I'm a pilot and I'm also Northern and no one ever writes stuff about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she ended up with this like horribly poignant emotional novel.
Yeah.
And she talks about all the research she did and how like, she couldn't even like detail it because of how many little things throughout the book she took from reality. And she especially like she was like, I kind of a little bit maybe fudged the thing about the pen, but there were pens like that. And it makes sense that they gave samples to the RAF. How cool. Mm-hmm. And so I put it in there.
Yeah.
She seems charming.
She does. She does. She also like writes like very quotable stuff. And this is not this is very so I'm reading the reviews for this new book. Or it's not that new. It was written in 2017. No, Rose Under Fire.
Oh, it's 2013. According to this Wikipedia.
Yeah, according to Goodreads. it's 2013. And there's this quote that says, hope is the most treacherous thing in the world. It lifts you and lets you plummet. But as long as you're being lifted, you don't worry about plummeting, which is true and sad. Mm-hmm. But everyone is saying like that it's a little bit more difficult to read than Codename Verity, just because like it's, and difficult as in like emotional, because mm-hmm. it's all at this.
Yeah, I'm looking
concentration
at this
camp
quote from NPR comparing it to Codename Verity. Barry Hardiman of NPR wrote that Rose Under Fire is a quieter, less breathless read, which ultimately makes it that much more devastating.
Yeah. Because and everyone that's like that is reviewing this here, they're kind of like, look, this is not Codename Verity. It's like pretty difficult because like you know that all of this stuff happened to people.
Yeah. Oh, this says the novel won the American Library Association's 2013 Schneider Family Book Award for books that embody an artistic expression of the disability experience for its portrayal of the victims of Nazi medical experimentation.
Wow.
Why are these considered children's books? Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, this whatever. Is not...
This should be more widely read. The thing, that's the problem with calling something YA. It's not that I think that, like, YA isn't as good. It's that when something gets classified as YA, people don't take it as seriously and it doesn't get as widely read. And that's stupid. Like, is this a movie? This needs to be a movie.
Oh my God, it would be so heartbreaking. I would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Randy Klett, for suggesting it, because
yes.
I'm really happy to have read this book. I feel...
Me too.
I feel... Oh, what's the word? Expanded. You know, I feel... Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just such a touching story of friendship that was just so heartbreaking and poignant, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. And it is... It's sad. Sort of... It's like somehow uplifting... But just because, like, I don't know, people do extraordinary things for each other when things get bad. And so, like, even though things do get bad, the fact that that is true is good.
Yeah. it's the upliftingness of, like, hope. Like, that it's not anything solid, right? It's not like we're like, well, mm-hmm. everyone was saved and whatever. But it's like people, while it's in a story of people being completely capable of the most evil and noxious things, we are also getting a story of someone
fighting that,
doing something and truly great.
Yeah
Fuck,
it's pretty good.
So thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and thank you so much again to Randy Klett. Special thank you to our Patreon producers.
Thank you, Aaron Fernandez,
Adam Howitz,
Amanda Nangle,
Amy T,
Anne Dwyer,
Ashley Fritz,
Brian Petty II,
Claire Moore,
Courtney McPhail,
Danielle Amana,
Danny B,
Emma,
Aaron B,
Gabriela Santiago,
Gianna Fernandez,
Gwendolyn Ludovic,
Jeremy Kronk,
Jeremy Goodfellow and Marco Pavlicic,
Jessica Smith Harper,
Jessica Yu,
Jonathan Venable,
Karen Lewis.
I see now the thing I was talking about earlier, how the freaking formatting got all messed up. Hang on. Kat Miller,
Katie Lilly,
Katie Olsner,
Keith Anderson,
Kelly Burns,
Kodiak S,
Chris Darina,
Landry Desmond,
Larry Nguyen,
Laura Hooper,
Luke Bartek,
Mandalay Wolschlager,
Max B,
Megan Lozier,
Mel Leos,
Melody,
Micah Yunus,
Miguel Camacho,
Miranda Hester,
Molly G,
Molly Marks,
Nathan Gordon,
Noah Spargo,
Rachel Bessert,
Randy Klett,
Rebecca Goss,
Rogue Kalahua,
Saoirse Descaro,
Sarah Wallen,
Sasha Gibson,
Sylvie T,
Tristan Buckner,
Victoria Beck,
Victoria Gray,
and Victoria Valdez.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you all. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Thank you for listening. We will see you for the April Outside Genre. Please wear a mask. Please get vaccinated as soon as you're eligible. And keep it extra creepy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team.
and liking our page on Facebook.